Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, October 21st, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and today we're going to spend a few minutes discussing the CBS Sports preseason All-America teams and individual awards because they're out. It's that time of the year. Season starts in less than 3 weeks, so dead leg. Let's run through our preseason individual awards first. Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Freshman of the Year. The CBS Sports preseason National Player of the Year is Gonzaga's Drew Timmy. The CBS Sports preseason National Coach of the Year is Purdue's Matt Painter. And the CBS Sports preseason National Freshman of the Year is Duke's Paolo Banchero. That doesn't exactly match my ballot. Is that the ballot you turned in?
It is. Here are my top three of each. Drew Timmy was my, for player of the year, Timmy was one, Banchero was two, Kofi Coburn, Illinois, was my number three selection for preseason player of the year. Coach of the year, Matt Painter was my number one, Mark Few was my number two, Bill Self was my number three pick, and in freshman of the year, Paolo Banchero was my number one pick. Chet Holmgren was number two. And then Tennessee's Kennedy Chandler is my prediction to be the third best freshman in college basketball this season.
I guess my ballot was National Player of the Year preseason. It went Timmy 1, Banchero 2, Johnny Juzang 3. Coach of the Year, we'll get into that in a second. Freshman of the Year was Banchero 1, Holmgren 2, Amani Bates 3.
Yeah.
And then Coach of the Year, I went Mark Few 1. I don't even remember who I had 2 and 3. But this is the one that's difficult for me. How do you even vote for preseason Coach of the Year? Like, what is your process? Yeah. How did you land on Matt Painter?
This is beauty in the eye of the beholder stuff as far as I'm concerned. I tried to select someone who I thought was likely to have one of the three or four best teams in the country that is highly respected and wasn't necessarily Gonzaga, which returns the preseason player of the year, and I knew Timmy was going to win it. So, like, I had Few number two, and, like, Bill Self has got an interesting, you know,
so you didn't vote for Mark Few because of Drew Timmy? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. That's basically
this is my
it.
Point. None of this makes any sense.
Hey, listen, what do you want from me? I don't know what the margins are on these things, but yeah, I also did this way.
Now he can't get votes because he happens to have a great player on his
team. That's right. I did it this way. I really, when it came down to it, I thought, who do I think is going to be most likely when we get to the end of the season, we hand out these awards, and the award tends to be handed out to a coach who might not have necessarily been projected to have the first, second, or third best team. But if that's the case, that person's going to win it. And I think Matt Painter is the most likely recipient to win it.
It's fine with me. I just, I find Coach of the Year to be the most interesting of these awards. And by interesting, I mean complicated, because preseason player of the year and postseason player of the year always goes to the same person, or at least the thought process is the same for everybody. In the preseason, you're just saying, hey, here's the guy who I think is going to be the best player in college basketball. And then the postseason award, it's the same thing. Here's the guy who was the best player in college basketball. But Coach of the Year gets interpreted so differently, because sometimes it really is the guy who had the best team. Like, at least at the time of the voting last year, Mark Few at Gonzaga. But But other times it goes to the guy who overachieved more than anybody else. Like the guy who was picked ninth in the Big Ten but finished second. Like, that's going to be your Coach of the Year. We don't hold coaches to the same standards that we hold players. Like, you would never in the postseason say, if Drew Timmy was clearly the best player, you would never at the end of the year go, well, I don't really want to give it to Drew Timmy because everybody expected him to be good.
Right.
And he just was good. But that is 100% what happens with coaches all the time. Yeah. You go, well, Gonzaga was preseason number one, and now they're a one seed. So why would I give it to Mark Few when I can give it to some other coach who was unranked in the preseason but now has a top 10 team? And I'm not even saying one is right and the other is wrong. I'm just saying that the process is wildly inconsistent.
And it's inconsistent across all of sports, by the way. I think Phil Jackson has won Coach of the Year once in his career in the NBA. Phil Jackson! Coach K hasn't won ACC Coach of the Year all but once in the past like 12 years or something ridiculous like that. So this is, it's a tricky one. But when it comes down to it, I didn't like explicitly hold, again, Mark Few was number two on my list. I just tried to project who's the team and who's the coach that when we get to the start of the tournament, see, some of these Coach of the Year awards are voted on at the end of the regular season. Some are voted on, you know, once we get into the tournament. But I think it's most likely that Purdue will be a one seed, and getting Purdue to that high of a level will lead Matt Painter to be the most likely guy who wins it.
Yeah. I'm okay with recognizing somebody who, you know, overachieves in ways, you know, in the postseason that nobody saw coming in the preseason. That's fine with me. What I don't like is holding incredible rosters against the coach, because the coach put that roster together. Like you so often, you'll give it to a guy who was picked 10th in his league and he finishes second in his league. And you go, well, that guy really overachieved. Well, he really overachieved relative to what we thought his roster suggested was possible. If he'd had a better roster, so if he'd done that part of his job better, he wouldn't have been undervalued in the preseason. And then it works the other way too. It's like, well, you can't give the award to John Calipari or Mike Krzyzewski because, you know, they had the best rosters in the country. Well, they put those together. Why should that be a detriment to their Coach of the Year aspirations? Like, Coach K has won 5 national championships, but just 3 national Coach of the Year awards. He's won 5 national championships and only 5 ACC Coach of the Year awards. And you ready for this? Never in the same year that he won a national title. His national titles are 91, 92, 2001, 2010, 2015, and his ACC Coach of the Year awards are 1984, 86, 97, 99, and 2000. Since 2000, he's won 3 national titles and 0 ACC Coach of the Year awards.
It's amazing.
It doesn't make any sense. Well, my favorite one is Billy Donovan had 2 national titles before he even had 1 SEC Coach of the Year award. Makes no sense.
Doesn't. This is, again, this spans beyond, it transcends college basketball into the pro ranks, basketball, football, you name it. Hell, I want to say, like, there was something where, like, in the NBA, the Coach of the Year, like, 3 times in a 5-year span, you won Coach of the Year, and by the end of the next season, you got fired in the NBA. So it's...
Sometimes Coach of the Years get fired at the end of the season. They were Coach of the Years. Dwayne Casey.
I feel like it's almost a prerequisite for getting fired as an NHL manager. So, it's a little bit bizarre. So you had Few, though, which makes sense. They're your preseason number one team.
I just think if you have built a West Coast Conference program to a place where you can lose 3 of your top 4 scorers from a team that played for the national title and still be the obvious preseason number one, then you're the preseason coach of the year. I'll keep it that simple.
Okay. Before we get to our teams, I have a question for you. Timmy, player of the year, Vaccaro, freshman of the year. Which one of those is more likely not to be that when we get to March?
Timmy, player of the year, because I think there's more real threats to national player of the year than there are to Paolo for freshman of the year. Like, I think Paolo could win both awards at the end of this thing.
Could.
I think he's going to be awesome. Awesome.
The reason why I ask it is, what's weird about this is that Paolo himself is a threat to Timmy, and then Chet Holmgren is a threat to both of these. Like, right. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know. Chet Holmgren could wind up being, like, we could look up in 6 weeks and say, man, Timmy's still awesome, but it is clear that Gonzaga is going to have a chance to win a national title because it has Chet Holmgren on the roster this year. So I find that to be fascinating. I would lean with you as well, you know, as we'll get into it with our first and second team All-Americans. There's obviously very, very good college basketball players this season. But the distance between Paolo and Chet, who's a close two, and then you want to get Amani Bates, Kennedy Chandler, Jalen Duren, on and on down the line. It will be intriguing, but I just find it more likely that if we're going to be wrong about one of these, it would be more likely that we would miss on Timmy as opposed to Vaccaro.
The preseason All-America teams have published as well. We did a first team, second team, and a third team. We'll get into that next. But first, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we've also tabulated votes for our CBS Sports preseason All-America teams. Let me run you through them real quick. The first team is Colin Gillespie from Villanova, Johnny Juzang from UCLA, Paolo Banchero from Duke, Drew Timmy from Gonzaga, and Kofi Coburn from Illinois. Let's stop there. Does that replicate your ballot? I had four of those guys on my first team. I did not have Colin Gillespie. I don't have any problem with Colin Gillespie being there, obviously. It's totally reasonable. I had Max Asemus instead of Colin Gillespie.
Doesn't match. Our CBS Sports preseason All-America teams was a tabulation of writers at CBSSports.com, a few from 247 Sports, which is in partnership with CBS Sports. And then every year in the preseason, we do get a handful of input from CBS and CBS Sports Network college basketball analysts. So we really have a big old mix here. And so, no, I only have three of the five, GP. My first team ballot was Timmy, Banchero, Coburn. And I think Timmy and Coburn were unanimous. Banchero, I think, was as well. And then I had nothing but bigs on mine because I don't abide by. I don't care. This team is never playing any other team. I don't need to start with a point guard. And you know what? I'd take the starting five against almost anyone else anyway. Because I think Banchero could run the point. Timmy, Banchero, Coburn, Trace Jackson Davis of Indiana, and then Purdue's Travion Williams. So, yeah, three of my five are big men from the Big Ten. That was mine. So you had four of the five. I had three of the five.
Yeah, and, you know, Juzang is somebody who just had a remarkable run late last season. He averaged 22.8 points in the NCAA tournament, got 28 in the Elite Eight against Michigan, 29 in the Final Four against Gonzaga, and, you know, launched himself into a place where I think you could reasonably call him a preseason National Player of the Year candidate and a first-team preseason All-American, especially considering he's not just somebody who posted big numbers, but he posted big numbers for a team that is now ranked second in the preseason. Timmy, like we noted, preseason National Player of the Year. He averaged 19-7 last season for a team that was undefeated on the night of the national championship game. Led Gonzaga last season in points, rebounds, blocks, and field goal percentage. He was terrific. Coburn, 17.7 points and 9.5 rebounds per game last season. Big numbers. He's a monster. And then Colin Gillespie is, again, the other first-teamer. You and I, neither one voted for him, but he is, a reigning Big East Player of the Year who is back for a fifth season. You realize he's already played 118 college basketball games and now has an entire season in front of him and could theoretically, if Villanova went all the way,
yeah,
he could get to 158 career games, mm-hmm. which would be a tie mm-hmm. for the most played yes. all time by a Division I player.
Yeah.
Trivia time.
David Leidy. Bang.
You son of a bitch. How did you know that?
Come on. Don't even question me on this. David Leidy, one of my, I've mentioned this on a distant podcast in the past. One of my like 20 favorite random college hoopers of the past two decades. David Leidy. Yeah. That, unfortunately, that record is going away this year because there's going to be a lot of dudes that passed him. Charlie Morris passed in David Leidy this year, by the way, down in Miami, fourth team. Yeah. So you were so excited. I knew I thought I
had you on that, man. I was shocked. I looked it up and I was like, this dude will never get this.
Tipping your pitches right now.
There is another, there's one other player on our All-America teams who has already played 118 college games.
That's already played that many?
Yes.
Buddy Boeheim?
No, it's Remy Martin.
Remy Martin, yeah, yeah, okay. I forgot he was on it. Did not vote for Remy Martin. We'll get to that in a minute there. Okay.
Second team is Max Asmus from Oral Roberts, Buddy Boeheim from Syracuse, E.J. Liddell from Ohio State, Trace Jackson Davis from Indiana, and Hunter Dickinson from Michigan. A. Smith is the guy I had first team. You know, we there are four players who were postseason CBS Sports All-Americans last season that are back in college. It's Drew Timmy, Kofi Coburn, Hunter Dickinson, and Max Asmus. And so I wasn't going to elevate anybody over where he was at the end of last season, anybody who was returning to college. So that's why I ended up going Asmus on first team as opposed to Colin Gillespie, who I had on the second team. The Asmus thing is just so interesting to me because he led the nation in scoring last season. I don't think we said his name one time until the NCAA tournament. Do you remember saying his name one time?
I probably learned how to say his name right before the NCAA tournament. Let's be real.
No, that's the thing. I don't think not only did nobody talk about him, nobody knew how to say his name until the NCAA tournament. He was totally off the radar, even though he averaged 24.5 points, 3.8 assists, 1.5 steals per game. He shot 47.7% from the field, 42.9% from three, and 89% from the free throw line. So he was almost last season a rare 50-40-90 guy. Trivia time. There was one player in college basketball last season who did 50-40-90. Mm. That means 50% from the field, 40% from three, and at least 90% from the free throw line. Mm. Can you name
it? Is it gettable?
You will know the player. He's a power conference player who's now in the NBA.
50-40-90. That's gettable.
I'll give you the league.
Give me the league.
He played in the ACC.
Draft?
Got drafted largely because of his ability to shoot.
I want to get this. This is the part where I hope people listening like know it, and they're just screaming into their phones as they're doing a workout or going on a run to the grocery store.
That thing NBA front offices love these days, a shooter with size.
I don't know if I'm going to get this. I'm trying to think of someone who went, like I'm rolling through the teams in my head. I think you're going to have to tell me. No one is coming to mind here. I'm going to hate myself when you tell me. But, yeah, I'm going to strike out on this one.
Start his career at the school at which he finished his career. He was a transfer. Played 1 year in the ACC, and now he's in the NBA. First-round pick.
Oh, you know who it is. You know who it is. I know who it is. The freaking kid from Rice. Hold on. He played at Virginia. Give me a second. Hold on. Trey Murphy.
It is Trey Murphy. Shot 50.3% from the field, 43.3% from three, and 92.7% from the free throw line. He was the only 50-40-90 player in college basketball last season. Back to Max Asmus. So gets ignored during the regular season, even though he leads the nation in scoring, you know, because he played at Oral Roberts. You know, folks just don't watch the Summit League. I say that as respectfully as I can say it, but yeah. most people aren't watching that too often. And then, like, you don't get, you know, Oral Roberts was 151st at KenPom.
They were the fourth place team in the league, GP. That's why this was the case. It's not like they were rolling early 13-1. That's not what this team was.
Right. So then they get an auto bid and they're 15 seed in the NCAA tournament. But like still, he's putting up all these numbers. They didn't beat a single top 100 KenPom team in the regular season. Oral Roberts didn't. And they played Missouri early, lost by 27. And so they're just off everybody's radar. Then they get in the NCAA tournament. They beat Ohio State by three, beat Florida by three, make the Sweet 16, lose to Arkansas by 2, 72-70, and that's where A-Smith just went wild in this tournament. He put 29 on Ohio State in a win, put 26 on Florida in a win, and then got 25 against Arkansas in that two-point loss. And that changes the perception of everything about you. Because if you want to be dismissive of the numbers in the regular season, and you don't watch much, you say, okay, he's a little guard scoring a lot of points for a, you know, whatever team in a, you know, mid-major league, whatever. But when you come and do it against Ohio State, Florida, and Arkansas, Big Ten, SEC, and back-to-back-to-back games, now you can't be dismissive of it anymore. That's how he got on NBA radars. And I think that elevated him to preseason All-American, because regardless of what he does in the Summit League this season, there is no intelligent way to say, yeah, but he wouldn't do that in the SEC or the Big Ten, because he played three games in the tournament against SEC/Big Ten, and he treated them the same way he treats Summit League teams. He put it on them. You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Steph Curry. Yeah. I'm not comparing him to Steph Curry, but Steph Curry averaged 21.5 points as a freshman, 25.9 points as a sophomore. Nobody cared. Nobody paid attention. It was just Dell's kid is putting up big numbers in a mid-major league. And then he got to that NCAA tournament in 2008, did it against Gonzaga, Georgetown, Wisconsin. And that's when he became a star. That's when the Steph Curry thing happened. So much so that Davidson was invited to play in the Jimmy V inside the Garden in the following season. That would have never happened if Steph didn't do that in the NCAA tournament. Like the past 13 years, the only schools that are currently outside of the Power 5/Big East/AAC that have played in the Jimmy V is Gonzaga and Steph Curry's Davidson team. And Steph Curry was off of everybody's radar for the most part until he did it on the big stage that the NCAA tournament provides. And that almost mirrors the Max A-Smith experience.
I have A-Smith on my third team. My second team, the only guys that matched were Dickinson and E.J. Liddell. This is really going to be as much of a man, a big man. You're the big man as we've had in a while. I think eight of my top 10 players of impact on really good teams are bigs. I had Dickinson and Liddell, and then I put Chet Holmgren on my second team, Johnny Juzang on my second team, and another guy on my second team that didn't make our first, second, or third team, which I think we will look up and it will be wrong at the end of the season collectively, is Javon Quinterly of Alabama. I put on my second team. I think Alabama will win the league. Quinterly will be the best player on that team, and when Alabama is a 1, 2, or 3 seed, I think it's going to be hard to keep him off the end of season All-America teams. That was my second team. Did you have Quinterly anywhere or no?
I did not. Okay. In fact, I noticed as I was going through this, we have zero players from the SEC.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's my only SEC player. You know, we're in the process of building out our top 101. Kentucky's got a ton of guys up for it, but like they might just be knocking each other out. I don't know. But yes, Quinterly is my only player from the SEC, and I put him mildly ahead of his really good backcourt mate, Jaden Shackelford.
Our third team of All-Americans is Remy Martin at Kansas, Arizona State transfer, Jaden Ivey from Purdue, Jaime Jaquez from UCLA, Trevion Williams from Purdue, and Chet Holmgren at Gonzaga. And so what that means is that we got 15 players, three teams, two each from Gonzaga, UCLA, and Purdue. Mm-hmm. And Ivey is the one that's interesting because he's an obvious NBA prospect, but is maybe the least productive
agreed
player returning to college who was voted on to our All-America teams. He only averaged 11.1 points last season while shooting 39.9% from the field, 25.8% from three. But in the final seven games, he did average 17.1 points. So he got better late. Or at least more productive late. And he got 26 in the NCAA tournament that, of course, was that loss to North Texas.
He did come on strong, wasn't terribly efficient, and definitely needs to become a more committed defender. He did not make my team. I'm going to go on record here and say that when we get to the start of the tournament, Jaden Ivey will be the third best player on that roster. I think Williams will be one, Zach Edey will be two, and then Ivey will be a close three. My third team was Gillespie. I did not vote Remy Martin. I don't think Remy Martin's going to be the best player on Kansas's roster. I voted Ochai Agbaji out of Kansas on my third team, along with Buddy Boeheim, Asmus, and then another player I voted for who did not crack onto the list, who I can see becoming, you know, like in this year of the big man, the four or five guards that'll stand out most, Andre Curbelo is ready to break the hell out at Illinois. And he is going to be probably one of the five most entertaining players. He has a certain element to his game that could probably drive Brad Underwood nuts. Not exactly a new age Russ Smith, but he certainly has plenty of dazzle to his game. So I do have two Illinois players on this list. Coburn made my first team in the night. Curbelo was my final pick, third team. He's the player that I think will keep Illinois in the conversation to win the Big Ten, potentially, you know, get further than it did last season when it couldn't even get to the second weekend there. I really like his potential there. So Curbelo was mine. What about you? Either third team or guys you voted for that didn't make our collective first, second, or third team at the site?
I had three guys on my third team that did not make any of our teams. Eric Ayala from Maryland, Armando Bacot at North Carolina, and Marcus Carr. So I had, who's at, obviously at Texas. So I had those three on my teams. The guys that made our teams that I did not vote for, Trace Jackson Davis at Indiana, Jaden Ivey at Purdue, and Jaime Jaquez at UCLA. So neither one of us voted for Ivey.
And Jaquez. I didn't vote for Jaquez.
One of us voted for either one of them. So I guess my ballot would have – Gonzaga would have been the only team to have multiple players as All-Americans. And I did have Timmy first team, and I had Holmgren on the third team. And we've talked about this before, how unique it is that – there's a team in the country that has a guy who is the, I guess, consensus preseason national player of the year. I haven't seen anybody else name anybody else. And also have the guy who was the number one recruit in his class incoming. And, you know, they're two different guys. And we sort of wondered, like, has that happened before? And we got a nice text from Matt Plisga, who is an SID at Pitt now, but previously was at Duke, and he brought up a really good example, and it's 2010-2011 Duke, which is a team he worked with, because they had Kyle Singler coming back, who was a preseason first team All-American, and they had Kyrie Irving enrolling, who was obviously the subsequent number one pick in the 2011 NBA draft. I went and looked it up. Singler was the leading vote getter for the preseason AP All-American team that season. And Kyrie was ranked second in his high school class. So it doesn't quite fit because Holmgren number one in his high school class. But, you know, if I remember correctly, at CBSSports.com, we had Harrison Barnes, preseason National Player of the Year, and obviously preseason National Freshman of the Year, because he was the number one recruit in the country. So that's the closest example we can come up with. Having Kyle Singler coming back to school as a preseason All-American first team and enrolling Kyrie Irving. But it doesn't quite match what Gonzaga has on paper right now in Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren. Trivia time!
Lay it on me.
That preseason AP All-American team, 2010-2011.
Oh, boy.
It included Kyle Singler.
Okay.
Jimmer Fredette.
Okay.
Harrison Barnes. Juwan Johnson. And a Big 12 player. Can you name the Big 12 player?
Oh, man.
This is too hard.
I can do it. We're talking 2010-2011?
Yes.
You got to tell me if it's Kansas or not.
It's not Kansas and it's not Texas. I'll tell you, didn't play for either one of those schools.
This was my first full season working with CBS.
Well, let's see how closely you paid attention.
You would have done so this, but so you did this before I joined. I joined in.
This is the AP All-American team.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Had a beard.
You ready for this? Give it to me right now. I gotta put in a new. I gotta get a new audio drop for this. I'm gonna do it right now. I'm going to get this. I'm going to throw my headphones down, and you're gonna close the podcast. I'm not even gonna hear the rest of it. 3, 2, 1. Jacob Pullen, give it to me.
Jacob Pullen is the correct answer. A Big 12, not a Jayhawk, not a Longhorn, had a beard. Of course it's Jacob Pullen, but I would not have gotten that in a million years. It was the first time I had seen or heard that name in years when I was looking this up last night and saw the name of Jacob Pullen. It was Kyle Singler, preseason All-Americans, Kyle Singler, Jimmer Fredette, Juwan Johnson, Harrison Barnes, and yes, the bearded Kansas State Wildcat, Jacob Pullen. I mean, I did say it wasn't a Longhorn and wasn't a Jayhawk, and he had a beard. So that's sort of
the beard is what brought it to me.
Yeah, that beard, that Jacob Pullen beard. By the way, for people who say this stuff doesn't matter, like it doesn't mean anything, do you realize that last year we had a preseason All-American teams, and the first team, you know what it was?
I can give you Jacob Pullen. I can't give you last year.
It was Luka Garza, Io DeSumo, Cade Cunningham, Corey Kispert, and Jared Butler.
We did a pretty good job.
Four of the five went on to be postseason first-team All-Americans, and the only one that didn't was Jared Butler, who was a second-team All-American for CBS Sports and the Final Four Most Outstanding Player. So last year's list, it held up pretty good. Like I mentioned earlier, the 15 players on this year's list, they come from seven different leagues, six from the Big Ten, two from the ACC, two from the Pac-12, two from the West Coast Conference, and one each from the Big East, Big 12, and Summit League. Zero SEC players.
Shout them out.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Pierre Jackson, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening once again. Ion Ballot College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest, just the most ridiculous pandemic, just real dumb, of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it. It really does help. So please subscribe, rate it, review it. We're going to talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, take care.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.